The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Good evening, everyone. It's so nice to be with you all. I'm going to, as others have, take a quick scroll, if I may, just to see faces. Thank you. Wow, it's really nice. As I was sitting and thinking about the talk, I was just thinking about the day here in New Paltz, and I don't know where everyone is, but it was quite gray and sort of wet and damp and overcast. And then it changed. The sun came out and things were different. You know, it was suddenly different. And I had, you know, had a plan to give a talk about consciousness. It was very, rich and deep. I was, planning this talk about, perception and consciousness. And I don't know anything about it. So, I don't know where the talk was going to go. And I'd come across a quote, and I can't even quote it accurately, but it was Suzuki Roshi. Perhaps it was a Tricycle Magazine daily quote, one of those sorts of things. But in essence, he said, a lot of my students want to know about consciousness. They want to talk about consciousness. And all I can say is, these birds, you should hear them. Listen to the birds was his answer to, his students' requests to understand consciousness. So listen to the birds. They'll give a better talk than perhaps I can. Today is April Fool's Day. So happy April Fool's Day. And I, was sort of cognizant that it was April Fool's Day today and I'd be giving a talk on this day. And that's fortunate because I don't have a lot to offer in terms of Dharma teaching, but I certainly do know a lot about being foolish that I am fairly well versed in. So I think I might be able to share a bit with you about that. So I did a little research on April Fools. Not a deep dive, and I'm not sure a deep dive can even be done. Well, I'm sure a deep dive can be done, but I did your typical Wikipedia, Google, quick look at it. And there's no real compelling start date, this is when it began. It seems to be a holiday that kind of arose out of mutual agreement, within culture. So in 1582 in France, when the calendar changed from the Julian to the Gregorian, the news traveled slowly. It didn't get to all the people kind of in the internet way we have today that you can tell a nation something in a second. It took a while to get from Paris to, Montpellier or wherever. It took a while to get there. So those who were still celebrating the spring equinox as the first of the year were called poisson d'avril, the fish of April. So they were easily caught, easily trapped. And, made fun of. And so that might be one of the origins. Others go back to even Roman times and the celebration of Hilaria and, sort of this cultural, you see Holi, the festival in India. It happens in many cultures, maybe not always at the same time, but there has been a celebration of foolishness. And I take great refuge in that, that has happened, that the fool has been valued, throughout history and seen as an important sort of archetype, if you will. And I feel particularly foolish today trying to give a talk at all, given the talks that have happened in these past weeks and months and this past year. I don't say it, as a platitude, truly we are blessed as a Sangha to have so many gifted teachers and speakers. I'm not counting myself in that. And now on Tuesday evenings, our senior students, who are, is gifted, if not more so, so many more opportunities, what a luxury problem to have more Dharma, speakers than time to listen to them. It's rare and it's pretty amazing that we have that. And so here I am left with this task of giving a talk. So the role of the fool, I think, is important. One, first, and on a very basic level, to offer levity and to brighten situations and just sort of let the steam off. So as a nurse, I'm aware of that. I know the power of laughter, how it can transform a situation. But I think a true comedian, you know, goes to a much deeper place than just the slapstick, that top level of the comedy. They speak to our human experience and our commonality as human beings, and they get to the real depth and juicy parts. So, you know, Schadenfreude, this idea of comedy, you know, based on the suffering of the other or the misfortune of the other, you know, I always thought, oh, it's so cruel. You know, it's a bit cruel. Why do I laugh? You know, when I see someone trip and fall or, you know, have that experience. And then I recognize, you know, it's really that intimacy in the Schadenfreude of that shared experience and those motor neurons, those, you know, mirror neurons that are firing in me, you know, this skin sac, seeing the suffering of the others. So it's knowing it's funny because it's, you know, we've experienced it. It's just not happening to us in this moment. So there was a 15th century in England, a quite famous court jester, Roland the Farter. And his main talent was described by his name. That was pretty much what he did. He was a flatulent for the court and was best known for his hop whistle fart, which he was brought out twice a year to perform, that I'm not quite sure what it entailed, but I suppose some sort of jump and then some sort of whistling sound and then a fart. And he was very well respected. He was given like 30 hectares and a house in Staffordshire, I believe. And so it was, who was the first? I think it was Henry the First is where he started his career. And then he really blew up, if you will, with Henry the Second. That's when things really took off for him. And, you know, it wasn't just the comedy, you know, and the jesting that was seen, that there's, you know, fairly compelling evidence that these, you know, fools and jesters were also sought after, you know, for advice and advocates to the, you know, royalty. And, you know, you have to wonder, why, you know, was it that shared common experience that allowed them to say things that perhaps other people weren't allowed to say to the, you know, ruling monarchy? So it's an interesting sort of way of looking at it, that there perhaps, you know, that it's that fart that brought them together that allowed him to speak to Henry the First and Second. By the time the third came along, it fell out of popularity. The morality police kind of jumped in and put the kibosh on this form of court jesting, and his property was taken from him. And, you know, I have to wonder why. Is it too close to home? You know, this is now the time of Shakespeare. Was it the foul and pestilent congregation of vapors that was too much for the royalty to really look at? It's hard to say. So I've always had some favorite comedians, and Margaret Cho, if you're unfamiliar with her work, has always been one of my absolute faves. And she tells a joke, and I put it in loose quotes, a joke, if you will, sort of a story that is comedic, where she's driving in LA and she shits herself. She is aware that she's going to have a bowel movement and there's no time to find a bathroom. And she talks about this experience comedically. And so the punchline, the actual shitting of herself, is this much of the joke. But the joke is about her sort of telling how this experience began. So it was, I believe, the late 80s, early 90s. I'm hoping Kayshen is somewhere. She can probably tell me. Kayshen has written a book just recently, so I'll plug it right here in a Dharma talk, When Women Invented Television. And so I'm sure she's got the deets on this, and I'll have to hit her up for it later. But it was, I believe, maybe the early 90s. And the show was called All American Girl, and it was the first Asian family depicted on television, if I'm correct. And I think she recognized the gravity of that, that this is a moment that I get to represent my community, that my community can be seen for the first time in television, not a sideline, not some, you know, other, you know, next door neighbor, but an Asian American family. And so she, you know, started this show, and it ran for a bit. It didn't, unfortunately, go for very long. But she came up and she tells in the joke how the execs in the network, you know, encouraged her, we got to Asian this up, you know, wear chopsticks in your hair. All the meals that you eat, you should eat with chopsticks, more rice on the table. Can't you, you know, the art in the house should be only calligraphy, you know, just all this sort of random stuff that she said, you know, that's not the lived experience of my Korean American upbringing. That's not how we live. Yeah, we eat kimchi with forks. You know, it was, she really struggled. And so she had to bargain. She had to decide what shit she was going to take and what shit she wasn't going to take. You know, where will I reside? How do I do this? You know, I have a platform. I have a platform to have my community seen and my voice heard, but it comes with some bargaining. You know, how do I make this happen? And ultimately, you know, in her bargaining, it ends with her, you know, going on this pomegranate or all persimmon diet because the network said, your face is too round, you know, and she's, I'm Korean. This is the shape of my face. This is a Korean face. But she tried to lose weight to be that white female ideal and went on an all persimmon diet and only ate that for months and months and months. And it wrecked her guts. And she lost control of her bowels. So in her comedy, she shares this really deep, 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 deep story that we laugh at because it's a common experience. If you haven't had it, one day you're going to shit yourself. I guarantee it. It will happen. But, you know, she makes it human. It makes it a very common experience. Talking about her bargaining, like, well, what if I just let a little go? Like, how much, you know, that horrible feeling that she was having. So, the comic has that ability, I think, to voice what others cannot, what others aren't allowed to say. They can bring truth to power. So, Margaret Cho, given the causes and the time, you know, causes and conditions, had to make decisions about, you know, I can't tell this network that they're racist. I can't, you know, tell them that this isn't the lived experience of a Korean American family or my Korean American family. So I think comedy and koan study are similar. I think what they serve to do is kind of dislodge things, you know, shake things up. You know, let us really see what's going on. And I wanted to find a koan that spoke best to this, you know, like what really speaks to the history of the fool. And I looked and looked, and then I realized, you know what? All these koans are telling stories about foolish, foolish people on a foolish, foolish pursuit. And, you know, I say that jokingly. And yet there's a grain of truth to that as well, you know. We're all stumbling around, you know, slipping on banana peels and searching in the dark. And all the time, the flashlight's right in our hands, you know, like we just have to turn it on and take a look, you know, and the koans are pointing to this again and again from different perspectives, I think, you know, not just that, but I think that that's a fair amount of what they get to do. So I live here in New Paltz, and the house that we moved into, it needs a lot of work. The inspector said, you know, he inspected the house for the prior owners and told them they needed to do the work, you know, replace that roof then. So now I'm, you know, a good 30 years into needing a roof. The boiler is far from green. It's a coal converting, you know, to oil boiler. We need to change that out. There's so many things that need to be done. And just a couple of Sundays ago, we were sitting zazen in the morning, and Manchin afterwards said, I brought bagels, you know, let's have a little socially distanced bagels and cream cheese. And I said, oh, that would be so nice. But my husband had made me aware that the toilet that was slow draining was now not draining, and it had backed up into the shower So the house was not a particularly pleasant environment to be in at all. And of course, he had to go to Poughkeepsie and go back to the city. So I, you know, realized my septic problems were going to be what I was going to be doing that day. So brought out the big guns. You know, we used really toxic chemicals, the ones you're not supposed to mix together, but you ignore the label and make a little mustard gas because you're going to get that drain clear. It's going to work. It's making promising sounds. I used baking soda and vinegar, all the different vinegars. When I ran out of just right, you know, white vinegar, I went to rice wine vinegar, very expensive drain cleaner to use, rice wine vinegar, apple cider vinegar, red wine vinegar. I would have used balsamic. I don't think I had any. All the baking soda in the house, very promising gurgling sounds, like something was going to happen, but nothing. Both plungers, the like sort of bellowsy one and the other plunger, very butch. I took off the faceplate to the overflow and clogged that and tried to do that. Nothing. Boiling water, you know, more chemicals, nothing. There's nothing that's going to block my shit. Blockage. Nothing was taking care of it. Promising. Like there'd be moments where I was like, oh, it looks like it's working. And then now, no, it's not working. So a plumber to just come on off hours is like $250 just to come to the house. So I was like, no, I'm going to just glamp. I'm going to be glamping for this week. Mm-hmm. I have a secondary, you know, kitchen sink so I can wash and bathe there and be creative about my bathroom usage, and I'm going to figure this out. And then one morning period of Zazen, I went, there's an access pipe between the house and the septic. Yeah, I mow around it. I knew there was something I was missing. So I went outside and I pried the top off that access pipe and I peeked in, and there was a trickle of water, slow trickle of water. And I had bought, you know, this toilet auger because I, and all of my YouTube searches, I went, oh, I need a toilet auger. That's what I need. That's cheaper than a plumber. So I got the toilet auger after I had scraped all the porcelain off the toilet with the regular sink snake, which they tell you don't do that, but I was determined. So I'd already scraped the porcelain off the toilet, but I got the toilet auger. So I went outside with the toilet auger to my pipe. And I said, you know, sometimes if the only tool you have is a hammer, go ahead and use that hammer. So I stuck the toilet auger into that pipe and I, you know, wound the auger and a little resistance and then it shot back. And then I wound it again, a little more resistance, and it's snaking back on itself. And I took it out, I re-angled, and finally a flow of shit and hair and lime and all the foul and pestilent human garbage that we create that is built up in those pipes for years and years. Sudden enlightenment. All was resolved. The flow had returned. So it was, you know, it was really, it was an enlightening moment. You know, there was a blockage and then the blockage was cleared. And, you know, a couple of days later, the shower was running slow and the toilet was running slow. So I had to go back out and I augered it again. And lo and behold, there was more. You know, it wasn't all of it, but it seems to be, fingers crossed, okay for now. So, you know, I think that that's kind of how our practice is. You know, that's what we do in our practice again and again. We come back. We find that we've been clogged up in our own shit. You know, that it's built up in us and we have to figure out how to clear it away. And it's this practice that I think allows us to do that, to auger it out. So I really didn't want to use this koan, but here it is. Mm-hmm. The 21st koan of the Mumon Khan, the Gateless Gate. A monk asked Unman, what is Buddha? And Unman said, a shit stick. So he removes any of these grand ideas about some image on an altar, something that's outside ourselves that we're reaching for above us. It's right here. It's what is common to us. You know, I think of Lenny Bruce, you know, his great comedic genius going through all the words you're not allowed to use. And he just took us right back, you know, and yeah, he was censored, but he took us right back to our commonality. So In Mumon's commentary on this, he speaks disparagingly of Unman, describing him as poor and only able to prepare the most basic of foods for his guests. He ends saying, very likely they will bring out the shit stick to support the temple gate, implying that his teaching is weak and meager. But it was common at this time to speak disparagingly, you know, when you were actually exalting the other. So, you know, this small twig designed to flick shit away, supporting the temple gate. It's Buddha. That's our awakened nature that supports the temple gate. You know, so indeed, Buddha is a shit stick. You know, again and again, our awakened nature is what has the ability to clear away that debris, to clear away, you know, what's allowing us to experience a childlike free flow, moment after moment after moment. But we get caught on ideas and likes and dislikes and all of that. So, you know, holding this gate up for all to pass through, isn't that what we're doing? You know, when we come together like this in these little rectangles and kind of commit to recognizing this moment as thusness, you know, things as they are, just this. So spring's arrived here upstate. The mornings are still cold. It was cold this morning. There was ice in the bird bath. We even had a little flurry of snow here kind of pass through really quickly. But things are greening up. My forsythia has come through, my daffodils. I got to steal a few for the altar. Tulips are on their way. I can see them doing their thing. And the grass in the leaching area of my septic is particularly green and long. It's longest there. And the deer come in and they eat it. It's probably the sweetest grass, you know, for the deer, I think. They know what's what. So as many of you know, I work as a nurse in the elementary school. It's changed a bit. I used to work one-on-one with a child with some difference in ability. And now I'm working kind of as the COVID police officer, sending parents' kids home and making them really angry that I have to do that. And I miss things that I had in my current job. And I'm sure some people miss having a job altogether. So I'm cognizant of that as well. But a part of my job that I had that I really miss is recess. And spring recess is great. Outdoor recess is the best. And Red Rover and Red Light, Green Light, and, you know, tag, and, you know, sometimes even just hanging out on the swing set. You know, it's just, I miss it. I think it's something we should all do. Like, I don't know how we advocate for bringing outdoor recess back into all work environments. But I think, you know, if everybody went outside and had 15 minutes of red light, green light, we'd just be way better. I think we'd be better off for it. So, and the kids, they don't have that this year, you know, so I do my best with them. I stand in my door of my office. Ooh, I can feel myself getting emotional. I stand in my door of my office when they get off the bus and I see them come in and I try, you know, to comment. You know, cute jacket, Pedro, you know, like, oh, you know, your nose is naked, cover up your nose, you know, just a quick interaction, you know, some elbows, you know, I think some of us now that we're vaccinated are a little more brave. There's certain kids that I'm like, screw it, I have to hug this kid. Like, I know what their home life is like, you know, I need to just get in there. So I miss that. But our Zen tradition, you know, is loaded with fools. It's got a ton of fools in it. Men and women who've pointed us straight on, who use plungers, sticks, augers to unclog us, to allow us to return to that childlike flow. One of our most revered Zen texts we chant on retreat is the Song of the Jeweled Mirror Awareness. And it advises us at the end, Dongshan is attributed with writing it, may or may not have. But at the end, he says, be like a fool. And, you know, as a fool, like an idiot, you know, it's really, he's not asking us to be ignorant, you know, it's not that blissful, you know, state of ignorance is bliss. But I think as Suzuki Roshi sort of advised his students, you know, Dongshan saying, listen to the birds. Don't get hung up on ideas. You know, you'll just get caught up in your shit. Listen, it's right here. It's not someplace else. So I will end with a poem by Dongshan that I found that I feel sort of speaks to this. So, first days of spring, the sky is bright blue, the sun huge and warm. Everything's turning green. Carrying my monk's bowl, I walk to the village to beg for my daily meal. The children spot me at the temple gate and happily crowd around, dragging to my arms till I stop. I put my bowl on a white rock, hang my bag on a branch. First we braid grasses and play tug of war. Then we take turns singing and keeping a kickball in the air. I kick the ball and they sing. They kick and I sing. Time is forgotten. The hours fly. People passing by point at me and laugh. Why are you acting like such a fool? I nod my head and don't answer. I could say something, but why? Do you want to know what's in my heart from the beginning of time? Just this. Just this.